drive. Bill Lane crosses up. Van Vliet, okey-doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get her own rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas Sykes quickly. No!
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Happy Thursday, birds, and welcome into this edition of the Red Zone here, the final edition of 2022, and the final edition for your favorite co-host, Dane Dreyfus. Dane, how are you feeling here, sitting here at the start of your final show?
Pretty cathartic, if I'm not going to lie.
That's a big word. Is that a word you're just saying just so Andy B can make fun of you?
Oh, no, did I say it wrong?
No, I'm
feeling acclimatized.
alongside myself, Mikey Fernelli, as always, David Moses will be joining us later. But for now, we have a big announcement. Breaking news. Braden Fogerson, the new voice of the Red Zone, alongside us. He'll be joining us in the studio alongside David and myself, starting with episodes in January. But we're going to have him come with us today. And it's kind of like if Michael Jordan and LeBron James played a game together, having Dane and Fogerson in the studio at the same time. So, Braden, how you doing?
It's great. I'm glad you brought up the Michael Jordan comparison, since we are indeed in the last dance.
The last dance.
Final episode of this semester, the last dance for Dane. I'm excited to be able to be a part of Redbird history.
Well, so, and it's fitting that he's on the show, too, because the Raiders do play tonight. They play the Los Angeles Rams. But I think there's only one thing I could say about who we like to call Burger Ferguson joining the show. There's only one thing to say, and that's Broncos country. Let's ride.
Broncos country,
free
let's win.
Ride. Every time.
Looking at the slate of games tonight, we will get into that in pick six. But yes, resident Raiders fan, Burger Ferguson joining the show today. But first, we want to talk a little bit about how we always do with the Redbird recap. But I will actually give you a quick rundown of today's show, because it's going to be a little different. Those of you who are listening right now, you must have paid attention to social media and saw we are doing the show half an hour early today-ish. We're about 5:36, excuse me. We have the Redbird recap, then MLB free agency, then college football, then pick six. And then we're calling it Dane time. We're going to end the show at about 6:30 and just do a little bit of a tribute to our friend Dane for the last half of the show, and just have David Moses call in, and because he's at home, and talk a little bit about our friend Dane. But first, we're going to do a traditional show for the first hour, and let's start with some Redbird hoops. Dane, you were on the call last night for Redbird men's basketball in the win. What did you see out there that was strong for Ryan Peden's Redbirds?
Well, just Colton Sandage just looked great. And he's the transfer from Western Illinois. He's the fifth-year senior. He's the local kid. And this was a shorthanded Redbirds team. They lost Liam McChesney in the first half. Didn't see Malachi Poindexter even dressed yesterday, which was surprising to me. I checked the injury report, couldn't find anything. So going to see possibly if he's doing okay and if anything's going wrong there. But the whole team looked pretty cohesive as a unit, and they were able to shut down future NBAer, as the crystal ball would say, Amani Bates. They shut him down efficiently.
Ferguson, did you get a chance to see any of that game last night?
I was able to follow a little bit here and there. I was having to study a lot last night, so obviously, you know, you can only listen to so much. But a good win for the Redbirds, winning by six. Trying to turn things around, they had a horrendous string of just a lot of bad momentum.
Yeah.
You know, that loss in OT was certainly frustrating for Murray State, but I feel like after that game, Illinois State got themselves back in the swing of things and feeling like they can start to win games again. And I think that's all the momentum that they need coming into this game against SIUE for the all-important Horton Fieldhouse game.
Yeah, two in a row going into this Horton Fieldhouse Classic game. They're going back to Horton Fieldhouse, the first game there in 34 years hosting SIUE. That'll be on WZND. It'll be Blake Borgard and myself and Andrew Petrushevsky. But yes, shameless plug as always. But this is good to see the Redbirds going on a little bit of a win streak after, as Fogerson said, kind of a hard losing streak for a decent amount of time there in the middle of the beginning of the season.
Well, I kind of like the narrative here. I mean, I know they lost in overtime in their first Missouri Valley game against a newcomer in Murray State, who is probably predicted to finish in the top part of Missouri Valley Conference. But you can get your first win streak as head coach, Ryan Peden. He can get that in Horton Fieldhouse, which would be kind of a cool little thing. Doug Collins will be in attendance for that one. So it should be a fun game. The hype has been there all around. And then, funny enough, I was looking at the schedule and saw that their next game was going to be against Ball State, and it was going to be in another Fieldhouse for the Indy Classic. So I don't know if that's their usual arena or not, but they're going to be playing in Fieldhouses back-to-back and possibly two retro uniform games. So just a really cool time to be a Redbird basketball player, for sure.
Two types of Cardinals facing off there on December 17th. They're going to be a little break before they start at Ball State there. It's a week-long break for finals week here for Illinois State. But to go out on a three-game win streak before your week break, that would completely change the momentum for that week off, wouldn't it? In practice, I would assume.
For sure. And it, you know what, too? Like, they're not going to be able to return back to their own stadium for a bit. They're going to take winter break, and they're going to go do a tournament, I believe. But this team is clicking at the right time. I think they're going to string together some wins, especially in conference. I never really like to evaluate a team, especially on the opening season tournaments as well. And I said that early. For whether you're winning or losing or going 500, it doesn't really matter. How you play in your conference matters. And that's when you could really gather momentum to take into your conference playoffs and then the big dance if you do well in that.
And not to mention, when you can build that confidence, you know, early is nice. But, you know, when it comes time to play your teams in conference, you know, things mean that much more, because when you win and the other team loses, that makes the gap that much bigger. It is that much more important to be able to win games then. So if you can get the jitters out now, that's great. Illinois State has kind of struggled a little bit here in the non-conference, which kind of seems to be classic Redbird athletics in general a lot of time. But, you know, now that I think you've had all these games, I think we're in through 10 games now for the Peden era, you know, the excuses have to start, you know, being able to not be given anymore, and it's now time to see, you know, where do they go from here?
Well, the thing is, too, the thing that I've liked about this team early on is that the whole purpose of the early games was looking to find someone to fill the void that Antonio Reeves left. And it's very apparent early on that no one's going to fill that void. It's going to be a team effort. It's going to be all around. I don't think there's any player that necessarily jumps out at you from this squad. But overall, everyone looks solid, whether it be Seneca Knight, Darius Burford, Liam McChesney. And this team could be in trouble if Liam McChesney is out for a long period of time, because he's honestly been the heartbeat of this team. Kendall Lewis is definitely probably their go-to guy. But Liam McChesney, that's their big man, their stretch four. Pretty efficient from three. And a nice thing, too, is that all these guys can shoot the three-point ball. Like, everyone is dangerous from behind the arc. So
I would also say, like you said, there's no one that has to stand out as the main guy. But there's also no one that really stands out as an obvious hole that the Illinois State team needs to be able to fill soon. You know, everyone is, you know, nothing super-duper special, but there's not any huge gaps in this lineup. And it leads you to believe that, you know, it's going to be a little bit easier to build around a team like this when, you know, you're not trying to do too much, you know, in one position. You've got everything kind of pretty even.
Well, when you have five Redbirds all shooting over 4 3-point attempts in last night's win against Eastern Michigan, and it's not all players you expect. I mean, it is sometimes larger players that are not known to be spot-up shooters, like Kendall Lewis, like Darius Burford. You have these players that are taking these shots and making some of them. Mm-hmm. And so this is obviously Ryan Peden's strategy in the new era of basketball. As I said last week, you need to be able to make sure all of your players can shoot from deep range.
That seems to be the strategy in pretty much any basketball league by now.
Absolutely.
More often than not, you know, you got a lot more people shooting a lot more threes. You got big men that are being told you need to be able to start figuring out how to shoot. And, you know, if you come in through the draft, say you're a really, you know, superstar power forward or center, but you don't have a shot, you know, that is, you know, not, you know, a plus that would be nice to have, but it's not a big deal anymore. It is a huge, huge gap in your game.
Well, what we're seeing, too, in college basketball is when you're not necessarily an upper echelon program and you're more of a mid-major program, the teams that are successful and make runs in the big dance are the teams that have had players play together for 4 years, build that chemistry, And, you know, a player that I'm also looking at this year that after the game he had yesterday that I think could really step up here is Colton Sandage, who is the transfer, like I said, from Western Illinois. He was a really big part of their offense last year and kind of got off to a slow start this year for the Redbirds. He was coming off the bench, wasn't necessarily getting much playing time. Then a couple injuries happen, a couple players don't suit up, and then he gets the opportunity, and he absolutely runs with him. He looked good with Luke Kasubke, and the defense was what I want to talk about for the Redbirds, too. They were smothering Amoni Bates yesterday. They were all over him, whether it was Kendall Lewis or Luke Kasubke. Like, they were not getting him any open looks. He had, I believe he didn't even have a point until the second half. So overall, I'm really liking what I'm seeing from Coach Ryan Peden early on.
So when you have four players that all score over 10 points, obviously that's a spread offense. And Dan, you talked about how there's no one player that could replace Antonio Reeves, but it feels like there's this veteran shift year in and out where one veteran transfers and then another that maybe was a two or three man in the year prior becomes that main man. You saw it when DJ Horn left for Arizona State. Here comes Antonio Reeves. Now Antonio Reeves leaves for Kentucky. And do you see Kendall Lewis rising to that job with 22 points and 10 boards? Or is it less obvious like that?
I mean, we lost a couple of players. Like, we lost Cy Chapman to I believe, Buffalo. And so Kendall Lewis is definitely rising to be the cream of the crop. He was leading the nation in rebounds at one point, which, funny enough, we were talking about earlier when we were doing mock game opens for the Northwestern State game. But Kendall Lewis is a forward that plays a very physical and he plays a big man game, and he's not necessarily the biggest guy in the court, but he's built too. If you look at his body archetype, he can get physical, back people down, get some points in the post, but he also seems to be the emotional leader for this team. When he's successful, the team looks good. When he isn't, the team doesn't necessarily look all that great.
We're going to wrap up this segment. When we come back, there's been all kinds of hot stove stuff going on in the MLB. We're going to cover that with two Cardinals fans and a Cubs fan. This will get interesting. You're listening to The Red Zone.
Hi, this is Paul DeYoung, former ISU Redbird, current St. Louis Cardinal. You're listening to Red Zone on WZND.
That was Paul DeYoung of the St. Louis Cardinals, formerly of the Illinois State Redbirds, and I believe the Memphis Redbirds, a AAA All-Star last year, I think.
You'd be correct.
Yeah, but he made his way back onto the team in August and September and some October, and did pretty well for himself.
Not much October.
No, not much, just a little bit.
But neither did anyone else, really.
Ended up losing to the eventual NL champs, so I think that helps the Cardinals' case a little bit last year into thinking that maybe it wasn't as bad to get out in the first round.
And not doing like a panic trade like the Blackhawks traded Panarin right after they got bounced by, who was the 8 seed, the National
Blues?
Predators.
Yeah, it was Predators and Blues 2 years in a row, wasn't it?
Well, the Blues weren't the 8 seed, but the Predators were the 8 seed because the Blackhawks won Central Division, won the West, pretty much, and then they traded Panarin off, even though they lost to who would be the Western Conference representative, and then they would lose to Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins, so I always find a way to tie it back into hockey. So.
It always has got to be related to hockey. We got two Cardinals fans. When we were talking about Fogerson joining the show permanently next semester, my one worry was that he's going to be bringing all the Cardinals fandom back onto the zone. But usually when David Moses is here, he's a Sox fan and I'm a Cubs fan. So it's good to have all the mix. But first and foremost, let's start in St. Louis. Mm. What do you think about the signing yesterday? 5 years, $87.5 for Wilson Contreras, I think the Cubs used to say.
Yeah, it is. You know, that is the move where you are finally, you know, figuring out we're not going to have to worry about missing Yachty. Yachty's been the guy, even in his, you know, as old as he was as a baseball player, having to be the lead guy and just having Andrew Kisner as a backup, you know, playing two-thirds or three-fourths of a season more often than not. You know, when you lose a player like that, you don't want to be stuck without a catcher. Catcher is a position that is the hardest to fill in MLB, probably because there's not a whole lot of prospects that are obvious. It's hard to draft catchers. It's hard to be able to pick up catchers from free agency that can do super well for you. So to be able to find a guy like Contreras, a guy that, you know, didn't hold it against St. Louis, that he's played against them for so long, you know, that's your start. And, you know, now you've got it kind of back to where you were in terms of talent. Now you've got to be able to build now because you've got to be looking for starting pitching and relief pitching, and you've got to be coming up with a way to, you know, not only make the playoffs like the Cardinals always do, typically at least come close to, but also, you know, find ways to have your team ready to, you know, go further in the playoffs.
Was I the only one who was a little bit surprised with that Contreras contract? I feel like the Cardinals win that pretty easily.
Oh, yeah.
I think he needed more money than that and maybe an extra year or two. I think that's what he at least wanted. I don't think he I get it's the winter meetings and it's easy to make deals now, but I think he was going to, I thought he'd hold out at least a month or two more, and in about January or February, get six or seven from somebody more desperate.
Well, what kind of contract did he have with the Cubs? Was it a like team friendly contract then, or?
Well, he was still kind of stringing along with the contracts they've always had with him, because he's been part of their program since he was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
He was in their Venezuela training area and stuff like that. So he's always been kind of stringing along. And I think the Cubs' last offer to him was 1 year, $20 million or something like that. They didn't want to go long term, but they also wanted to give him a chance to prove that he should go long term at 30 years old.
I think it's a legacy thing for Wilson Contreras and why he signed with St. Louis, because there was only two, I think there was two heavy bettors. It was St. Louis and Houston. And Houston, you've already got, they're going to be the reigning World Series champions. They've already painted themselves as the villain. And Wilson Contreras has been a little bit of a villain himself. He plays mm-hmm. pretty emotionally, which don't mind that. But he goes into a place that has been known for having a Hall of Fame catcher. He fills those shoes instantly. It's going to be an instant upgrade at the bat. Wilson Contreras is just as good a game manager, maybe not as good a pitch framer, but overall, it also saves the Cardinals from having to rush Ivan Herrera, who is a catching prospect. He's only 22 years old, and Kisner is still a very serviceable backup. But like you were saying too, Mr. Fogerson, is there are a lot of catching prospects coming up in the MLB, and it will not be a position of need. That's not something you want to be needing, especially when you don't necessarily have a very ready one. Ivan Herrera is very raw.
Especially for some pitchers, Wilson Contreras becomes a National League DH, though. Because you see, like you said, I'm glad to hear that you guys in St. Louis, for your guys' sake, have a Cardinal catcher coming up the pipeline, because Yan Gomes last year for the Cubs split time with Wilson Contreras, and a lot of the Cubs pitchers saw more success with Yan Gomes behind the plate when it just came to straight-up earned run average. And so, you look at Wilson Contreras, fantastic hitting catcher.
Mm-hmm.
Defensively, he's got a cannon of an arm. But he does lack in some regard when it comes to pitch framing and to helping out his pitchers just a little bit. There is his one major flaw in addition to being 30 years old. But I thought he'd get more of a friendly contract for him. That's all I thought.
I think the bar is going to be high too, because coming off of 20 straight years of having Yadi as your catcher, you're coming with a brand new all star that's going to come and replace him. But if these Cardinal fans are looking and saying, man, he's not framing pitches right, or he can't block as well as Yadi would, or Yadi would have made that play and he couldn't.
Right.
People might start to get a little bit tired of that. Hopefully, that's not where the bar has to be. Because we know that Contreras is ultimately a great hitter. He's got great hustle. He's got the ability to, throw the ball, all wherever mm-hmm. you need to throw it. And, maybe take some time to get used to being in a new uniform. But, ultimately, I think the Cardinals can expect the same star player that they saw playing against them the past several years.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to live up and fill in the shoes of the image of Yadier Molina. But I think just looking at last year into this year, there will be huge improvement in just the catcher position for the Cardinals. I think, obviously, I don't think I have to tell anyone here or on air that Yadier Molina had seen better days in the last 2 years.
Absolutely.
I think Wilson Contreras will come into St. Louis and be a revolutionary for that position. That said, I don't know if that's going to continue when he's 35 years old. You might have to see him more DHing more often.
And then what Braden said, too, is exactly right. They need to address their pitching at this point. The hitting's going to come now. Would you like an upgrade at shortstop? Sure, but Tommy Edman was a Gold Glove shortstop last year. You still probably have the best defensive infield in the MLB right now, because you're going to have Arenado at third. You're going to have Brendan Donovan at second, or Nolan Gorman, whoever you want. Then you've got Tommy Edman at short. You've got Paul Goldschmidt at first, and you've got Contreras at catcher. Okay, you're fine there. Your outfield's going to be some mixture of Dylan Carlson, who still could be better, Lars Nootbaar. I think they have Tyler O'Neill under contract. He might be under arbitration. But then you have a top five prospect in the MLB in Jordan Walker coming up. So the Cardinals are basically set. They're going to be a dangerous team next year. They're probably your favorites right now to win the NL Central.
If they can pitch.
And speaking of pitching, a pitcher I would have liked them to add is someone that the Cubs added, and that's Jameson Taillon.
You took it right out of my mouth.
That is a good contract for the Cubs, I think, because if he can come around and prove his worth there, then all of a sudden that's multiple years locked in. But it kind of scares me because it reminds me of the Marcus Stroman contract, and after 1 year of that, I'm a little bit worried to have Marcus Stroman under contract for 3 straight years.
Stroman, he was very hit or miss last year, and
yeah,
not playing on a great team to get much run support. But this... The problem I have with that Cubs signing, and I like the Bellinger deal.
Oh, yeah. We'll get into that in a minute, but the Taillon thing.
You're stuck in a what-are-you phase. Unless they're planning on picking up your Dansby Swansons of the world mm-hmm. or Carlos Correa, like, they don't have the hitting. Their pitching is actually, I don't mind their pitching.
No,
as
the
much.
Pitching is solid. And what we've seen in the MLB is that pitching can win you more games than you think.
And moving back to Stroman, Stroman is a player that plays with emotion. He wears his heart on his sleeve. He gets very angry when things don't go his way, and he's in your face when they do.
So Carlos Zambrano?
playing for a team like the Cubs that was not good last year. Certainly had to have some sort of effect on his game. And
yeah.
I think, you know, a couple of years from now, probably in the third or fourth year of his contract, if the Cubs are, you know, starting to swing towards good again, you know, I think that's when you get a little bit of a better version of Marcus Stroman than you saw this year.
I love that Cody Bellinger contract, though.
I'm in love with it, too.
A year-long contract, a prove-it year.
In a hitter-friendly ballpark.
And, yeah. And he can play both the outfield or first for us if we need him to. And we have a gap at first base right now. And he could play there.
As someone that is an absolute Cubs hater, he's going to look really, really good in the Cubs
uniform. He is. I had the same thought.
But yes, he's going to look great in the Cubs uniform.
Any team that can have like a revitalization project with Cody Bellinger is going to like the way he looks in that uniform.
You just said about Stroman that it's hard for Stroman to kind of play, to paraphrase, on a losing team because he's so emotional. Mm. Cody Bellinger has won a World Series. He's won an MVP. And now the last 2 years, he's just gone downhill. So when the Cubs are kind of building back, let's see if Cody Bellinger can build back with them and show some skill this year and maybe get back to that level. Where we saw him for a couple years there was no doubt the two best players in the National League are Christian Yelich and Cody Bellinger.
Yeah.
Both of them have fallen off a little bit.
If you look at some of the hitters that have gone and left the Cubs, Schwarber obviously has been doing great things, but if you look, Chris Bryant hasn't been doing all that well. Javi didn't have that great of a season. And then the Cubs turned players like Patrick Wisdom into an everyday third baseman and a pretty darn good one at that, too. So I'd like to see how they can mess with his swing mechanics. I know he's had a few injuries that have screwed with that, but I also really like the pitching staff the Cubs have now. Keegan Thompson, I think, is underrated. I like Keegan Thompson a lot. So they'll be a scrappy team for sure. I have them probably as like your third or fourth team in the NL Central, though.
I don't know. I don't think the Brewers have enough this year. I think the Cubs should come in second if all things go well.
If you still have Corbin Burns and Brandon Woodruff, they're going to win you a lot of games.
Where are the Brewers at this point, though? They trade away Josh Hader, and they get a decent amount of prospects for it. But what are you looking at this season if you're a Milwaukee Brewer fan?
I don't know if you could call that a reload for sure, so I think they're still a little bit off.
No, and that's why it's the Cardinals might have the easiest cakewalk.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
And the Cardinals were bad at the beginning of the season last year, and they still, like, won that division. They had that division wrapped up by early August. So, I mean, the Cardinals...
There's future coming up for the Reds, Pirates, Cubs, and Brewers, but I think in this year...
And Cardinals.
Yeah, well, yes, but also I'm just saying in general for 2023, there is a position where that's what you can look forward to if you're a fan of those four teams. Meanwhile, the Cardinals see it as, okay, here's our window. Not only because they're good enough to run through the NL playoffs if they ever get the chance again, but because they have a cakewalk of a division at this point.
That's why I think the management is so dang important for St. Louis right now, because this is, you know, the division is, you know, if everything goes to plan and hopefully you don't have too many injuries either, you know, the division should be pretty easy. But it's all about trying to maintain your team's strength going into the playoffs. And I'm sorry, the past several times that the Cardinals have, you know, gotten rid of their manager, it's been to replace them with the exact same person that's, you know, not gonna, you know, upset too many people in the clubhouse and things like that. It's just putting a brand new face on the exact same type of play calling. The bullpen management has been horrendous since Matheny, and it's cost them a lot of playoff games. It's cost them a lot of series. And, you know, I think that's why, you know, when you have an NL Central where everyone else seems so nothing special, you know, that's why the management is going to be that much more important in terms of finding ways to beat the Padres, the Dodgers, the Phillies.
And just winning those games against, quote, nothing special. Because at the end of the day, every day is a different day in baseball.
Well,
you have to win enough games, even in the ones that you should be winning.
The team that probably could be the biggest up-and-comer next year is probably the Pirates, because you just have exciting players like Brian Hayes, you have O'Neill Cruz, that, like, they've got young pieces. I still like Mitch Keller as a player, but I also like Hunter Green for the Reds. There's gonna be a lot of young talent that's gonna play in the NL Central, but the Cardinals with their aging core, like it's definitely theirs to lose.
David would be mad if I didn't at least make mention of the Chicago White Sox, but that's a good way to wrap up the segment. Actually, talking about the White Sox, because there's really not much to talk about. They really haven't done much. The Clevinger deal last week, but this week when you know things have started to heat up, there hasn't been much for the White Sox.
Wait,
they lost to Abreu.
Are
the, I mean that was.
I mean, but
a
are
while
the White
ago.
Sox done? That's my question.
I don't know if I want to say they're completely done, because I don't feel like the rest of the AL Central was amazing this past year either. I feel like, you know, both leagues, their central divisions are not great and not too hard to be able
to
find.
Let me clarify. I didn't mean if they're done with their window. I meant, are they done for this offseason? Are they content with the team they have in the field under a new manager?
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah.
Are they going to give it one more run with the team they have?
Probably, and I like the Clevinger ad. He was a Cy Young contender a couple years ago, but I also will say, with a couple of the bigger deals too, with the Xander Bogarts, like, the Padres are just a bunch of Muppets. You're just spending money to spend money, and why are people getting... We didn't even mention Judge either.
No.
Why are 30-year-olds getting paid to play until they're 40? Like, who's the last effective player? Don't say Albert Pujols. He is an anomaly. But, like, who's the last effective player you've seen at, like, age 37? Like, Nelson Cruz, and that's a DH, man.
Tom Brady was not effective, like, at age 34. When the Angels signed Pujols, even in 2011, that was a bad contract throughout. You know, you get to age 30 and your arbitration stuff finally ends and you're set to be able to be a free agent and get whatever deal, you know, whatever fat sack of money a team is willing to throw on your doorstep. You know, you are going to be signed until you are near the end of your career, and that's just how the MLB works, and you're stuck paying people that are going to be just, you know, not hitting for great percentages and things like that because they can hit hard.
Well, and that's why the Contreras deal is, first of all, phenomenal in the current market, that he only got 5 years.
Uh-huh.
And then you look at players like it makes sense to sign your Acuna's or your Tatis's or your Wander Franco's for
these
insane deals that are going to... Like, Soto's, doesn't it take him until he's, like, 36?
We were actually just talking about this before we went on air. He's still on arbitration. He's not going to actually get his big money deal until next year. But he turned down the $15,440 from Washington.
That might be a Mike Trout contract.
He turned down $15,440 already from Washington, though.
But how long is his contract right now?
Right now, he's only got the 1 year left, $20 million for just this year.
It might be 10 for half $1 billion. 10 years for half
$1 billion. But where is he going to want to do that? Because I don't think it's San Diego. Yeah, they can't afford him anymore. And I think they know that. That's why they went out and got Bogarts, and that's why they're going to overpay everybody else.
He'll be a Dodger.
No need to
or
save
Yankee.
Money. Yeah, exactly. No need to save money for Juan Soto. He's going to
or
go
a Philly
somewhere
with
else.
The way they spend money. Wow.
They run out of money eventually too.
Yeah.
And when you give Trey Turner that long, and you're going to be paying him that much a year until he's 40 something, that's going to be interesting for the Phillies.
Oh, he could be a Met too. I actually wouldn't mind seeing Juan Soto be a Met. That'd look pretty cool, honestly.
I don't think Juan Soto will play his whole career for one specific team. I think he'll keep bouncing, to be honest.
I hate that.
I just see it in that superstar. He's awesome, but I don't think he's going to be one of those players that plays at
one place. The money is. I don't think he cares. He already has a World Series. He doesn't care.
If you would have asked me before he got suspended, my answer would be completely different, but I feel like I agree with you that he's not going to, you know, get a deal that sends him.
He got suspended?
Didn't he?
Do you mean Tatis?
Oh, I'm thinking of Tatis.
So they're comparable players in the Padres. I understand the thought there, but no, and they're similar players. And then that's the other thing. They have been already paying Tatis on a huge deal as well.
And he's going to be an expensive DH for him.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's terrible in the outfield.
Yep.
And he's I thought he was okay at shortstop, but I just don't get it. I did not get that move for them.
And especially now signing Bogarts.
Why wouldn't you throw that money at, like, a DeGrom?
Yeah.
They need that pitching, if anything. Yu Darvish has probably only got a year or two left of being really, really solid for that team.
I
would think they probably took their shot at, but
maybe. I think the Cubs dodged a bullet, though. If out of all the shortstops that were on the market, Xander Bogarts is the one I would least want.
It's still not completely over, though. I still think the Cubs could throw a shot at Dansby Swanson. I think Correa's out of the market for the Cubs because Correa's going to go for that 10-year deal around that ballpark.
Doesn't really deserve it.
No, but does Xander Bogarts? Does he deserve 11 from San Diego?
Bogarts is a little bit better a body of work of hitting. But I would argue Correa does too. Like, Correa, he's a pretty... I like Correa as a hitter the best, but he has MVP potential. Xander Bogarts is not. And Dansby Swanson, on the other hand, dude's a proven winner.
Yeah.
Ever since Vanderbilt, with being with the Braves, and he is going to get you 275.
Elite defense,
20 to 25 home runs, 80 ribbies all day. And that's another reason why the Corey Seager deal for Texas was just... Like, you could have waited a year, and you wouldn't have had to dish out that money for a pretty bad defensive shortstop, where it's important to be defensive. And that's why I'm cool with the Cardinals running with Tommy Edman. If you're getting gold glove defense and average offense, so be it.
You look at Carlos Correa, takes a very friendly to him contract from the Twins, so he can only play a year there, basically be a 1 year rental in Minnesota, so then he could get his better contract now. And this is exactly what he wanted. He's licking his lips right now because he sees Xander Bogaerts getting this 11-year deal from San Diego, and all of a sudden the bar is set. Correa better get a better contract than that.
I feel
for
like
him, that's how he's thinking.
You know, he worked for TBS, like, doing the post-game interviews, watching his former team, you know, win throughout. And, like, I feel like that just drives an athlete to be like, I need to find a team that I am going to be able to win, and I'm going to be able to lead them and be the star and be the guy. Because, you know, moving to a team that doesn't end up making the playoffs and underperforms, and you were supposed to be their leader, and then watching the guy that replaces you become the star that leads them to playoff greatness, you know, you don't want to stick with that feeling for long.
Well, and here's the thing, though, too. You're looking at all this money dished out for shortstops. Isn't part of dishing out a lot of money supposed to do with scarcity? There's an oversaturation of talented shortstops in the MLB.
Mm-hmm.
Why are people opening the... They're like running backs from the NFL at this
and
point.
And four of them were probably all-stars. All four of them are all free agents at the same time. And so they're all just trying to one-up each other.
I mean, Bogaerts trying to move positions to third and second.
Yeah, but I mean,
like
Bogaerts one-ups Turner. And now you're going to see it with probably Correa. I don't think Swanson's going to get nearly as good of a deal as those rest of them unless one team gets really desperate.
And none of these guys are generational hitters. They're all hopefully on a contending team, they're your third or fourth best hitter.
I don't know if I'm going to be wrong. This might be a clip. Like, I think Correa is going to get probably a bigger contract than Bogaerts somewhere. Maybe like 10-ish, but probably more money per year.
I think he could get – he's probably going to get like $40 million a year, something like that.
Which is insane.
Yeah.
At this point. Because it's just such a risk. And when you have a player tied down in a contract for a decade, paying him that much money, most of it guaranteed, it's I don't know how most teams do it. And I'm actually glad the Cubs don't usually do stuff like that. Knock on wood. We're going to end that segment on that. We went a little long on that one. But when we come back, we're going to do a little bit of college football, something we don't always do. But Dane wanted to talk about it in his final show. I could not say no. You're listening to The Red Zone.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back into the Red Zone. We're going to talk a little bit about college football, and for once, not the Redbirds. Let's talk about the college football playoff. But first, the Heisman Award, awarded annually to the best player in collegiate football. And Dane and Fulgerson, what do you guys think this year's Heisman? Dane, start us off.
Caleb Williams. I mean, I don't know if I'm just... I might be awarding it to the most talented player and possibly not the best body of work, especially with... Max Dugan from TCU being able to bring that team to the college football playoff. But Caleb Williams, man, watching him on the field, some teams are going to really break down whatever they have in the offseason to go get the first overall pick next year and go after this kid.
I don't know how easy or hard it is to pick between these quarterbacks. I feel like there's a case for all of them. I like CJ Stroud, but I'm kind of biased toward Big Ten football, so I don't know, you know, whether I should really believe that that's the case. But the main point that I want to get across is the Heisman's supposed to be, you know, these are the four best players in college football, and you get to choose between them. Why are they all quarterbacks? Can we, like, you can't, first of all, you can't even get a running back, a wide receiver. There's so many great defensive players that have made an impact in the NCAA, and to say that, you know, you should have just one position that gets to be the best college football player and get the biggest award in all of college football, I think it's just kind of frustrating because, you know, you get stuck with guys that, you know, perhaps aren't always as deserving, and I just feel like it lacks creativity that you're stuck only picking from one position for the biggest award of the year.
I couldn't agree more, but here's the problem, too. Stetson Bennett, first of all, being nominated is a joke. Mm. This is a 25-year-old quarterback who is not... I'd rather have Hendon Hooker nominated, missing the last three or four games of the year. I find it hard to believe that Stetson Bennett's done enough to where... And how, like you said, how do you not get a defensive player like Jalen Carter to be nominated for the Heisman or something like that? But I think Marvin Harrison was robbed. I think if you wanted to get a different position. But I do think Stroud, very deserving. Caleb Williams is probably my clear-cut winner because on that offense, like, he only has really one NFL talent on it, and it's Jordan Addison, the wide receiver. But C.J. Stroud obviously gets to throw to Jackson Smith and Jibba. He gets to throw to Marvin Harrison Jr., and he just overall has all these blue-chip prospects. Not that USC is any slouch, but Lincoln Riley hasn't necessarily gotten more than a couple of recruiting classes. So I think it should be Caleb Williams. And there really hasn't been a player that's run away with it this year. So, Farnelli, what do you think?
I don't know. I'm looking stuff over as you guys are talking about it. It's not really as much as my ballpark as it is yours, but I think maybe a couple weeks ago, if you would have asked me, I would have thought C.J. Stroud. I mean, 5-6 weeks ago, I would have said Hendon Hooker. But I think looking at it now, Caleb Williams, just statistically, is probably the best option. As you said, there's really no runaway, so at that point, you just got to go into who physically was the best. C.J. Stroud's biggest downfall might be that in those losses in the Big Ten, he just didn't look good, had a couple picks against Michigan. And just in general, I think, like you said, Stetson Bennett, really good quarterback. Benefited by the best team in college football.
I don't think he's even that good.
Good quarterback, but he's very much benefited by playing on the best team in college football. And I think he should get his props for more than likely leading his team to 2 straight national championships. Georgia's probably going to win it all, I would think. While he should get credit for that, I don't think it's enough to make him the best individual player in college football. And like Fulgerson said, I think we should maybe move past quarterbacks for just this award when it comes to that. Because sometimes quarterbacks can be carried by solid teams.
Well, it's also the NFL MVP award. If you think about it, it's always it's usually quarterback, and then you have to have...
What's the flashiest player? It's the captain of the offense.
Well, and I think it's just dumb, too, because in the NFL you have the MVP and then the offensive player of the year, which the offensive player of the year sometimes is a QB as well, and then or it's the player that is most likely to be deserving of the MVP award.
Yeah.
Because the quarterback is such an important position. It is the most important position in sports, I would argue.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't have a good quarterback, you're not going to score points.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and it's debatable overall, but personally, like, quarterback, like, that you can look at quarterback play.
Look at the San Francisco 49ers right now. We always talk about it on the show.
Well, Mr. Irrelevant, but let's get back into the college football playoff. Who do you like in the college football playoff games? Because I actually have a hot take that I honestly think Alabama should have made it. I don't think TCU deserved to after losing the Big 12 to Kansas State, and I know that's a scorching hot take, but I think Bama, deservedly so. I know they didn't play, but they were a great two-loss team, and I think with this being the last year of the four-team playoff, I would have rather just had Georgia play Bama and then Ohio State play Michigan again.
I very much agree with you on TCU. If you lose to Kansas State like that, you're supposed to be, you know, in the top four. I mean, you cannot afford to lose a game like that, and you shouldn't be able to, you know, at least be as ranked as highly as you are. I think TCU still has a season to be very much proud of, but I don't think they beat Michigan. As for Georgia, Ohio State, first of all, I feel like Georgia-Ohio State should be the earlier game. I feel like the later game should be the better game, and I don't see why Georgia versus Ohio State should be all that competitive compared to Michigan versus TCU. I would take Georgia in that one, too, and then I would take, you know, it's probably a toss-up for Georgia versus Michigan, but I would take Michigan because I love the Big Ten.
I think it's a joke that Georgia's playing Ohio State. I think Georgia should be playing TCU. And I know TCU lost the Big 12 championship, but overall, like, you can't tell me that they're a better team than Ohio State.
We're going to end this segment a little bit early here, a minute or so we can get David Moses on the phone. He's at home this week dealing with a little bit of an injury, but he's going to still join the show for Dane's last show. Me, myself, Fulgerson, and Dane, we're all going to be back. And, of course, then David Moses, when we get back from the break, it'll be time for Pick 6. You're listening to The Red Zone.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back into The Red Zone. I'm Mikey Fornelli alongside Dane Dreyfus and Braden Fulgerson, and I believe we have David Moses on the line now. David, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, there he is. David Moses, back home in Chicago, dealing with a little bit of an injury on the IL, but couldn't miss the opportunity to be here for Dane's last show. So we're glad to have you on the phone, David.
Oh, yeah. I'm so glad to be able to be here. I just want to say that because I wasn't able to give my tribute video to Dane, you have been such a great co-host this semester, and I have had just the honor and privilege to be alongside you. You've been such a consistent ray of a smile, positive vibe, and you have it has really resonated throughout the entire news and sports room and just WZND in general. So thank you for all your commitment to WZND, and I know I'm going to hear big things for you in the future.
Thanks, David. Getting me emotional in the booth right now. Feelings mutual. I love you, buddy, and I'm so sorry. I think I play you in fantasy football in the News and Sports League. I beat you last week, I think. But
you play me now, I think.
Oh, yeah, I play Burger. Yeah. This is awesome. But the feeling's mutual, man, and just great stuff ahead for you too and all of us. So it's good to hear from you.
So we're going to have more talk with Dane when we get done with Pick 6. But first we have to deal with business, of course, fellas. We got to get done with our business. Then we'll have the Dane Hour. We'll get emotional then. But first we have some NFL picks to make. David, why don't you start us off? Who do you like in the Jets and the Bills this weekend?
Well, I think this is going to be an easy one. The Jets, you know, they having problems with their quarterback situation. I know Mike White had just tore apart my Bears defense, and then last week had a little bit of a tough time. So I'm going to go ahead and go with the Bills. You know, you get into these late points in the season where you just can't lose these easy games because seeding, I know they're the number one team in the AFC right now, so it's going to be crucial that they keep that. So I'm going with the Bills.
All right, Dan, what do you think of this one?
Give me the Jets. I think this defense is legit. I think Mike White is a serviceable enough quarterback. It's much better than Zach Wilson. I'm going to go with the Jets because I think they're going to make a unhealthy Josh Allen run around for quite a bit, and the Jets are going to go on a little run here to end the season.
Look, for me, it was a toss-up, and I have Jets written down, but I need to change my answer because I just feel in the moment that, you know, the Jets won the last game by 3, and it's a toss-up, but I changed my mind. I want the Bills because I think Josh Allen at home will be able to just kind of take advantage of that and, you know, this game, you know, do a coin flip, do whatever you want. I would take the Bills just by that much.
We like to talk about how the Bills always play down to their opponents, sure, but I think in this one, the Jets, obviously a pretty decent team this year, but I think it should be pretty cut and dry for the Bills, and so did Steve, leaving Dane Dreyfus on the Lonely Island in this
Lonely
one.
Lonely Island.
I was giving you the opportunity to say that. Well, who knows? You're probably going to make another pick to give you another chance to say
we'll
that.
We'll see.
Looking forward now to an NFC North matchup. This is Minnesota visiting Detroit. David Moses.
That's going to be a good game, actually. You know, Detroit is really shocking a lot of people here. And what was the bet that you made at the beginning of the season, Mikey?
Oh, it was if the Vikings somehow found a way to lose more games than the Lions, I would shave my head. And we've reached the point where that's not even physically possible anymore.
Okay, so you won that bet. But anyway, I think I'm going to go ahead and take the Minnesota Vikings. They had a really good year this year. I like Justin Jefferson, Kirk Cousins. You know, for the most part, it's had a pretty solid year. I like Minnesota.
Dan, what do you think?
I'm really conflicted here because Minnesota, the last time they were 2-point underdogs to a team with a worse record than them was the Dallas Cowboys on Thanksgiving. So with that logic, give me the Lions. I think the Lions' defense has really came to play this past couple weeks. Jeff Okuda is going to lock down Justin Jefferson, and they're going to run the ball. You're going to see a heavy dosage of DeAndre Swift and Jamal Williams. Give me the Lions.
Ferguson, what do you think? Vikings and Lions.
Yeah, Lions have a better offense. Vikings have a better defense. I take the Lions. I think that their ability to use Williams the past several weeks has been amazing for them, and it's really, really worked out. They haven't had to stick with Swift just because he's supposed to be their number one guy, and I think it's really, really worked for their offense. I think it works well for them against this Vikings team.
I didn't expect there to be more Lions picks in this one than Vikings, actually. I'm going to go with the Vikings. One, because I don't really like the Lions. And two, because I think they just have such a high-powered offense, they should be winning these games. And they are, I think they're 325, so it's not primetime. Even though Kirk dispelled the primetime thing on Thanksgiving.
I thought it was a 12 o'clock. Maybe I'm mistaken.
Maybe I'm mistaken, too. But either way, it's not a night game, so Kirk should be fine. And I'm going to agree with David in this one that we're going to go with the Vikings. Steve, of course, in classic fashion, picked the Lions fan in him. And he is winning in the standings. This gives me a good chance to talk about the standings. Steve sees 50 wins, 29 losses, still batting .633 in pick six. That's impressive. David Moses, 47-32, .595. The guest today, that's Braden Fogerson, 46-33, .582 percentage. Dane Dreyfus, 44-35, .557. And myself, 37-42, .468. Sounds bad, but I was in a much lower spot at one point. I've climbed back just a little bit.
I went 6-0 last week.
That was impressive. That really helped you.
Thank you.
I think Guest has still got you, but only by 2 games. So it's a battle of Fogerson and Dane here. And they have, I think you guys have 2 separate picks so far.
No, he went with the Lions. I went with the Lions. But I went with the Jets.
Yeah,
so if the Jets, Jets can snag me a win, that's a game on the Guest.
I wonder if you'll ever get it to happen when you say Jets, Jets. Usually it doesn't work when you say it. This is the last chance, too, for it to work. We'll have to see. Well, I mean, I think we're going to keep doing pick six on Twitter, I believe, through the last couple weeks. I think that's the plan. We'll do it on the @WZND Sports Twitter. We'll all text our picks to each other and then probably just share it on the Twitter so you guys can keep up with our picks and fade them if you would like, but we can also just see what the standings are going to be looking like at the end of the year. Let's take a look, of course, at the Tom Brady's and the 49ers, or sorry, the Bucks and the 49ers. Obviously, I love Tom Brady, but what are we thinking in this game in San Francisco, Dane?
I'm going the Niners here. Brock Purdy, baby.
No longer doing the fun tribute hour for
you. Hey, Brock Purdy ain't going to be pretty. They were talking about the guy can ball. The guy can ball. And that defense is just too... Tom Brady is... He's washed, dude. This is it.
David, what do you think? Please help me out.
Yeah. What is it? Thomas Edwards Patrick Brady.
Junior.
I'm going to go with that.
So
Junior.
Close.
I'm gonna go. He had two kids have a birthday this week, so I know they're going to be wanting to get this one to them. So I'm going to go with the Bucks. I don't believe in the Brock Purdy magic.
I don't believe in it either. I'm going to go with the Bucks in this one as well. I think coming off a comeback win against the Saints last week was all that the Bucks needed to get back on track. They should still win the division, and I think it starts here with a nice win over Tom Brady's hometown team, a team that could have signed him a couple years ago in the 49ers. Fogerson?
For me, I would definitely take the Bucks as well. Tom Brady has a new girlfriend, it looks like, on social media, and I think that he is, you know, getting his swagger back. Even if Garopp was starting this, you know, he wouldn't really be inspiring me against this Bucks defense, but especially when you've got Brock Purdy instead, I don't see any reason that this 49ers team wins this game.
I was surprised that the Rams went and got Baker Mayfield. I kind of thought the 49ers would take a chance on that.
It's waiver claims. It goes
well,
in order.
Well, true. You know, it depends who gets the best shot. But
I'm sure they did.
I'm sure they did, yeah.
I don't think so.
You don't think they took a chance at Baker at all?
No, you have the storyline of Mr. Irrelevant taking your team to the big game.
You ultimately have a team that could be good enough to go all the way. You need to be able to have a decent quarterback. I'm not saying Mayfield is.
The Iowa State alum, Brock Purdy, was projected as a Heisman winner and a first-round pick his senior year of college. He has the pedigree.
Lest we forget, you only need to be a quarterback to be a Heisman projected.
Yeah,
winner,
we just talked about in the previous segment.
And he did choose the worst ISU, so I might have to switch my pick.
Let's take a look at Miami and the Chargers first, but first I got to say Steve went with the Niners in that one as well. Let's take a look at Sunday Night Football. It's going to be the Dolphins and the Chargers. Now, I've expressed in the past how I'm not a big Chargers guy this season. I think just like the last couple of seasons, they have the talent, but it just doesn't come together, and I don't think they're going to win this one either. Mm-hmm. I think even at home, I think it's going to be the Dolphins game. I still think the Dolphins are a scary team in the NFC, and regardless of the fact that they started hotter than they are at now, I think the Dolphins will take this one.
I agree. I thought Dolphins. I didn't really have any particular reason other than just the fact that I've seen this Chargers team play a lot and being a fan of an AFC West team, and they don't really inspire me nearly as much as this Dolphins team does. I feel like they're really, really well coached, and I think that in a game where both of these teams are trying their best to, you know, finish off the year strong, I think the Dolphins have a slight edge in that department.
Dan?
Give me the Fins. They're going to I don't even know if they're going to dominate, but I love the over in this one. I think there's probably going to be like 60-something points scored. So,
Steve went with the Dolphins, and David to make it a sweep.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I'm gonna be on the lonely island.
Ooh.
The Chargers, they're on the outside looking in the playoff race right now, and I know every win at the end of the season is going to be crucial. I think Justin Herbert and his offense is going to show out. I think they're going to grab a win here and surprise a lot of people. So put me on the lonely island.
Oh, California love.
Dan, you want to sing it one more time because David did it?
The lonely island.
California love.
So we have a Broncos Country Let's Ride sound effect, but we don't have a Lonely Island sound effect after all this time. We might have to get one, but it won't be the actual song. It'll be Dane doing it.
Oh,
so we'll
perfect.
Always do it for years to come.
Broncos Country, let's ride.
We have that one, though.
great value Andy Samberg over here.
We don't have any Broncos games this week, so we kind of have to just throw that one in there when we can. Let's take a look at Monday Night Football. This is kind of an interesting game.
Let's save Burger for last.
All right. No, this isn't the Raiders one.
Oh, Sunday night. Oh, sorry.
We'll still have Burger B. Lasso because you called it. We're going to go with the Patriots and the Cardinals. I'll start this one. I am going to go with Arizona.
Okay.
And I was waiting to get a reaction on that one because I think the Patriots should be favoring this one. I have two reasons why I think it's going to be the Cardinals. They're a home team, and I picked up their defense in fantasy.
Okay. Works for me.
I have two reasons to root for them, so if I'm going to watch this game, I'm going to root for the Cardinals, might as well pick them.
No, let me actually jump in because you said they have the home team advantage. They are 1-6 at home this year. They have not been good at home particularly this year. I also think that Murray has been just miserable this year. I think he was disappointing in every facet, and he's ruined
the team in general. Even though they didn't have super high expectations, the team in general has somehow not met those expectations.
Yeah. You know, there still is a slight advantage. I think it's just been bad luck that they've been scheduled a lot of tougher games at home, but I don't think that they beat the Patriots to Monday night.
Yeah.
Dane?
To my dad's chagrin, I'm going to take the Pats. And I like your reaction to being, I'm going to go with the Cardinals, like the question marks at the end. This is a question mark game. It's a coin flip.
Exactly.
No one knows.
This is a huge question mark game. David, what do you think?
You know, this is a really tough one. I don't like the Patriots in this one. I think I'm going to go with the Cardinals.
Let's go.
You know, Bill Belichick has had a really tough time being able to get his quarterback, second-year quarterback, Mac Jones, really going this year. I haven't really kept up with their defense. I do believe the Patriots' defense is pretty decent, but I don't think it's going to be enough to beat them.
Let's take a look now at Thursday Night Football. The Raiders and the Rams with the new, I believe they're going to have John Walford start, but they do have Baker Mayfield ready to go in L.A. I saw that ready to go. We're going to lose. We're going to have this one end with Fogerson, but first I want to have the first pick in this one. I'm going to go with the Raiders. This, again, is kind of a coin flip game, and I think this is, again, two teams that did not meet expectations this year. Obviously, the champs coming into the season not meeting expectations with a losing record, and the Raiders, now with Devontae Adams, he's had a solid season with the team in general, just again, kind of like the Chargers, year in and year out. Everyone says this is the year they take the next step, and we haven't really seen it. But I think in this one, on primetime, even though it's kind of a hard game to bet because it's a coin flip, I'm going to go with the Raiders. Dame, what do you think?
Give me the Raiders because Devontae Adams is Jalen Ramsey's daddy, so that's all I need to say.
That was no Packers game in the Super Bowl. You had to sneak that one in before you were done with the red zone, didn't
you? Yeah.
David, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Raiders as well. I think it's an understatement to say that Devontae Adams has had a really good year. He's had an exceptional year. Many have argued that it could be potentially one of his best years in his career. That along with Josh Jacobs, I know Josh Jacobs is a little banged up right now. That offense, you know, those two really spearhead that offense. I think they're going to win easily against the Rams.
Fogerson, the Raiders
who
fan?
Who did Steve pick?
Oh, you're right. Steve went with the Raiders.
All right. I'm going to go with the Raiders.
Ooh.
We'll make it a clean sweep. If the Rams had, Stafford, I would pick the Rams. I think even if I could know ahead of time that Baker would start for the Rams, I would probably pick the Rams. But, I mean, Wolford's like a DoorDash driver. Like, what is this dude doing? He's not good at quarterback. And
sounds like a college professor.
He's not beating even the Raiders. The Raiders' defense is not great unless they're playing like the Texans or something, but they can beat John Wolford.
What do you think about the Raiders this season? Before we end the segment, I want to talk to you as our resident Raiders fan, and they're obviously probably not going to make the playoffs at this point, so we have to do it now while we can. What do you think about the Raiders in 2022? What was your expectation and where are they at based on that?
My expectation was that with the new coach, they're exactly where we thought. Everyone in the league was begging the Raiders not to sign him because McDaniels is not as good a head coach as everyone wants him to believe. And
time again.
He was bad. And he was really, really bad. The past several weeks, they've kind of turned things around and gotten some momentum back. Derek Carr had to, have some post-game tears to get his team going, but they've started to be able to...
Happens once a year.
Yeah, they've been able to start, doing really well, and he was able to get his mascara back on his face, too, so that's really nice, but... they do have some momentum, and this offense, I do really like this offense. This Raiders offense has always been really, really good and fun to watch, but the Raiders defense has also been really, really inconsistent. Facing teams that aren't great, they are pretty good and they stand a chance, but against a good team, they're really questionable, and they may be able to turn things around, at least to ruin their draft pick and be mediocre instead of get a good draft pick in the end, and then maybe get some momentum for next year. But I think that they're right where I expected in terms of being underachieving this year. Everyone kind of expected they would be good, and as a Raider fan that's watched them all the time, I didn't expect it.
So what's the next step for them? Where do they go?
Still got to continue to add the defense. They've made a lot of good changes. I think, especially at corner, they used to always be horrendous at that position. But they've made some improvements on defense, and that's what's been important. Devontae Adams, I was afraid trading for Devontae Adams that he would actually underperform with the Raiders and that everyone was assuming that he would be good, and he's not. I feel like more of the times than not, I'm just a narcissist when it comes to the Raiders, but Devontae Adams settled really, really nicely into this team, and there's been a couple games that Devontae was not on, and when that's been the case, the rest of their receiving core has been great. For some reason, Hunter Renfrow has all of a sudden become non-existent in the Josh McDaniels offense. Instead, they're going to, Mac instead, and he's been really, really good in his place. So when Devontae is on, he's amazing, and when he's not, you've got people like Mac Jones or Mac, you know, you got a bunch of other guys that take his place. Definitely not Mac Jones. He's not on their team, so.
Not yet.
Yeah.
Who knows about the future? We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're done with most sports talk for now. Maybe it'll get into sports talk, but we're going to do a little bit of a tribute to our friend Dane. He's going to get in the hot seat, and we're going to do a little bit of an interview. We're going to keep David on the line as long as Demos is fine with that one to be here for the interview, and we'll keep it up on this edition of The Red Zone. Welcome back to The Red Zone. It's Mikey Fernelli, Dane Dreyfus, Braden Fulgerson, and my friend David Moses on the phone back at home. And we have a special last little segment for you guys, about 25 minutes here. We'll talk a little bit about our friend Dane. He is a senior graduating this upcoming week, and this is his last edition of The Red Zone after a semester with us here. And personally, I couldn't ask for a better co-host starting the show off in my first semester as host as well. Obviously taking over for a totally new crew this semester, and I'm glad that we're all here to finally do this this last thing. Dane, what are you thinking in your final little 20 minutes here? Do you have anything big you really want to say? Because please hold it back if you do, about sports.
Okay. No hot sports takes at the moment. I can't believe this is it. Like, I've been kind of in a fever dream, like, the past couple weeks. Like, this is the best 4 years of your life. Like, college is said and done, and it's hard to believe, but, like, I definitely have a few thank yous. I definitely want to thank you and David, especially. Like, you guys are amazing, super talented as sports broadcasters, but even more importantly, you guys are great friends, great leaders. Obviously, you were part of the selection process and trusting me with upholding a legacy that all the previous hosts and producers left behind, which leads me into thanking Joey Dwyer, Leo Stodaher, Joe Kennedy. And, like, we stand on their shoulders, anyone before them, too. Thank you for just making the show what it is. Want to thank our faculty advisor, Steve Cease. Want to thank our media business director, Deb Lesser, because they're what makes this station run. I also want to thank Madeline Moore and Alex Bejel, because they really motivated me into going for this. Maritza Navarro-Lopez, former NSA, too. Like, I could go on for days about people to thank.
So not only, sorry to cut you off, but I was going to say, not only do you have all these thank yous for news and sports people, it's because, I don't know if all the listeners know this, Dane, although this is your fifth year, you have been involved with lots of different departments at Z&D. You want to give us, like, the quick rundown? Because this is your first semester in news and sports, but where else at the station have you, you know, dipped your toes in?
Absolutely, and I've been, I started in traffic and one intern of the semester, too, during COVID. Kind of crazy. I don't know how I did it. And then after that, I transitioned to assistant client services director, where I worked with clients of the station to raise money through trades and airtime sales. And then after that, I transitioned into along with that, I did DJing. Obviously, I had my DJ shift. And then after that, I went for news and sports, and I went for the Red Zone shift and a Red Zone co-host spot, and I got it. So that led me here, and I wanted to focus mainly on that, and that's how I got here. And, like, you make so many great relationships throughout here. I also just want to shout out Spack Stash, the boys, like, you already know. It kind of just like a friend group that we named from the news and sports guys from years past. But, like, I also just want to thank a few family members first. I want to thank my mom and dad. They made college possible. They are what drive me to be the best version I can be. I've had a lot of titles, especially at the station, but nothing makes me more proud than to be David and Leslie's son and my sister Veronica's brother. And we'll be adding, I'll be getting another sibling too, her fiance Caleb. But I also wanted to shout out my grandfather, who never got the opportunity to listen to the show, but I know he would have, he would have really loved it, and he would have loved to follow your guys' careers too after the show. But he was someone that really inspired me to do sports broadcasting, and I miss him dearly. But and he is my inspiration why I do this to this day.
So you've gotten a little bit involved in sports broadcasting this year specifically. And you can take a second to catch yourself here, but because that's really touching. But you've gotten really involved in sports broadcasting, not only just through the Red Zone, but you actually called a game for us last night in basketball. You called some volleyball, some other basketball. It's a shame we won't get to hear you call some baseball, because I know you're a fan of baseball or hockey by any means. But what has it been like to have that transition into calling games as a broadcaster?
It was something that was kind of my goal at the beginning of college, and I took some classes, and it's a very rigorous job. Like, it's very glamorous looking. It's very difficult, and it's the day-to-day that I found to be something that I didn't know if I could do. I'm kind I would call myself a whimsical free spirit, doesn't like to be necessarily tied down to one thing, and there's a lot of freelancing that comes with the territory, so I kind of got scared off by that. But then after watching people like yourself, like Leo, like Joey, call games and just the joy and enthusiasm and passion they have for it, it made me fall in love with it again. And it's something that I don't know if I'll necessarily pursue as my full-time profession, but will definitely be something I do as a side gig.
Yeah, and that brings me to what I wanted to be able to ask you. Obviously, it's okay if you don't, because you still have time, but, you know, do you have a next step right now as far as a plan of what you're going to do after?
I'm definitely going to probably be applying for a position with Redbird Athletics, still staying involved in the community for next semester. If all goes to plan, that would be awesome. If not, I'll still be around on campus, probably working with news director Blake Borgard at TJ Maxx or something, or you'll see me around. I'll find something cool, maybe like a bartending job so I can get some more cool stories. Hopefully start a podcast here or there to fill the void that...
Stories is the big kicker there.
That'd be really great if you worked with Blake, because he said, I remember when he applied for TJ Maxx, and he was just like, oh, I'm just going to take this job and just, like, get 2 weeks worth of pay for just watching videos, and then I'm going to quit. And now he still loves
it. He's still there, and he's helping other people find a job there. But I was going to say, stories. What is, you think, your favorite story or some of your favorite stories from your time here with News and Sports, with WZND, and some of the fun stuff that we do here at the station?
Wow. It's just some of the events we run and just the people. Like, just we have a department we call Clown Car because it has so many interns. But just going in there and hanging out with the directors in there and annoying them was just great memories. And then we would do Sporkles. And if you don't know what a Sporkle is... it's a sports quiz, or it's not necessarily just sports quizzes, but it's pop culture quizzes and stuff. But me, Joey, and all the news and sports guys would do Sporkles. We did that a lot with Andrew Avola too, and that's another name I didn't even mention. And just about how great he is, he was the voice of the Pistol Shrimp this past summer. I could go on for this just 15 minutes just talking about the people at ZND that I've met and how great and how talented they are, but like, and the memories are just the people, like the relationships you make here.
As the people are the place, the people make the place, is what Blake Hornstein used to say, another alum of ZND. Of course, that's a quote from Aaron Rodgers, so I didn't want to say that, but we'll pretend it's a quote from Blake Hornstein. David Moses, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
All right, what do you got to ask to our friend Dane?
So Dane, going forward, what advice can you give that one listener who is potentially wrestling with the decision on whether I want to join WZND? I believe we have an informational January. Was it 6th or 9th?
Early in January, after second semester starts, we're going to have an informational meeting for any students interested.
Yeah. So, what advice can you give them if they're, you know, not really set on a yes or no if they want to join you?
It's worth a try. Like, you don't have, like, there's the commitment here when you're entering is very, like, it's a place where we can find you a place if you don't know where your place is. But even if it isn't your place, it's somewhere you can make relationships. And then just joining a club or an RSO is amazing. But like for WZND, like when I particularly found it, I was definitely not in my best place and I felt like I was lost. And when I found ZND, I was like, oh my God, like I found like the place where I can leave a legacy, because that's my goal in life, is just to be remembered and to make these relationships with friends and leave a legacy that would make my family proud.
Great question, David, by the way.
Excellent question.
Ferguson, what else you got?
I mean, just in general, you know, you had all these departments, and I'm not going to try and make you pit one apartment against another, but do you have a particular department that you either had as your favorite or was perhaps the one that, you know, if you had to choose a department that you wouldn't have joined, that you would have said, no, there's no way I would have.
I'm not joining a department that's led by Joey Dwyer. I'm not joining production. No, I'm just kidding. They did great work. They did award-winning work.
Yeah.
But
with yourself included. Yeah. You can give yourself a shameless plug. You voiced an ad that ended up winning at the IBA Awards.
That one was actually Max Martin's.
Oh, okay. No,
that
mind.
One, it was CBI that was the one for...
No shameless plug for Joey.
He can get the CBI shameless plug. But the leadership in all the departments was just so great. The one thing I just know I couldn't do was what Madeline Moore and our current GM Fletcher Peterson do, and that's being the general manager. That is... They juggle a lot of things, and it's very difficult, so I respect what they did. But overall, favorite department, they all had such unique challenges. I think there's a department I was best at, was arguably client services. I do have a little bit of the gift of gab, and I could sell ice to an Eskimo, and that's it's not necessarily the most appealing trait to have, to be a somewhat of an artist of the
art
the
of sales.
Yeah.
The art of the deal.
Sell me this pen.
Sell me this pen. This is the pen that I'm holding, and I'm Dane. Do you want it?
do you sign it for me?
I do like to sign my name a lot.
Okay, that's something about Dane that the listeners should know before we sign off for the show. Half the time, I will write out my notes for the show and then a little chart to keep track of pick six on a piece of computer paper, and then I will leave it blank on my desk for the remainder of the week. So then as the game scores come in, I can update the whiteboard in the news and sports room. Usually by about Sunday or Monday, there was just 1,000 Dane's autograph all over. Not only that sheet, but every notepad on my desk.
I've seen them.
And it's not in in the studio. It's in any other office. It is everywhere. And it's not a narcissistic thing, I don't think. I think it's just Dane enjoying writing his name. Maybe he's getting ready for when he's famous. I don't know. You got to explain this to us.
I'm a big sports card collector, or used to be. And I just love the science behind an autograph and just the how people can authenticate it. And I just love having multiple autographs for different situations. Some athletes have great autographs. Like, I love Michael Jordan. He has a great autograph. Derrick Henry is a great autograph. But it's just something I've always enjoyed. And I've always thought, like, it would be cool to sign an autograph because it's something people appreciate. Like, it means someone appreciates mm-hmm. you and they want to have your stamp of approval on something. And I don't know, I've always felt like I've had a calling for greatness. I would love to be on SNL someday. I do plan on taking some comedic improv classes at Second City, hopefully, and maybe making it big. Who knows? It's just a pipe dream, but I feel like WZND has been a big part in setting me up for success in the future.
Who do you think your hero was watching Saturday Night Live or a comedian or any of that type that got you into, you know, wanting to be a public speaker or something like that?
Well, I look like Andy Samberg, but I wouldn't go with him. I would probably go with a Bill Hader, a Jason Sudeikis. And if I was more of an impressionist, which I am definitely not, Jay Farrow. Jay Farrow was so funny on the show. And I'm a big SNL guy, too. Not necessarily a huge fan of the show now. It's gone kind of in a weird direction, a lot of turnover in the cast. But I also was a big fan of Pete Davidson when he was starting on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of called, like, this guy's really funny. Like, he's going to be great. And then he dated Ariana Grande and blew up. So just another hot take there from the Great Dane.
Pete Davidson hot take. Was that one of the ones that was on your parlay? That, you know how when I talked about Tim Tebow, you said anytime Tim Tebow mentioned? Is anytime Pete Davidson mentioned also on that? It had to have been. Odds on that one are really, really bad. Well, good for you, but bad for us.
I don't know. Pete Davidson, I'm a big fan of some of his work. I like to stand up, and I like the King. Actually, I've liked a lot of the movies he's been in, The King of Staten Island and Big Time Adolescence, so... I guess the odds were probably better for me, but I don't think that's something you guys knew.
SMD was a good special as well.
It really was.
Yeah.
So what's your favorite Red Zone memory, Ben, of just this semester? We've had some live interviews, me, David, all of our guest hosts, Fogerson, and Andy P, Blake Borgart. We've had a lot of guest hosts, a lot of great interviews. Winker's Right, Shea Kubo, Caitlin Prodzinski. What has been some of your favorite stuff that we've done so far?
Had a little bromance with Winker's Right. And
yeah.
Great story. Great personality. Oh. Like, even one of the easiest guys to root for. So that's probably my favorite interview. But favorite story was just the fever dream of a show we had with, I think Andy P was in the studio. It was me, you, and Demos. The studio was probably like 80-something degrees.
Yep.
We're just sweating.
It was right when they turned the heat on here in Fell, and it wasn't that cold yet. And it was, yes, very sweaty. And we were talking about the White Sox because it was right when they decided to fire Tony La Russa. And we had... way too long of a segment where Andy P was just telling jokes about the White Sox, and we just lost control of the show.
And it was hilarious. And so that was probably one of my favorite memories. But yeah, overall, a lot of good memories. And I can't believe, like, that this is basically, I'm done with classes. I have one more online course, but I had my last class today.
Yep, I was there
in Stevenson, and I'm just in shock that it's done. Like, I'm going to get a degree in mass media promotions and sales, and I don't want to say I thought it would be more difficult as I took 4.5 semesters to graduate, but and I've had my adversity with multiple concussions and hockey-related injuries and family loss, but overall, like, we're at the finish line. I'm looking forward to graduating in newly named CEFQ Arena. Shout out Redbird Athletics. But the future of this station and the sports department in general is just so bright. I can't wait to come back for reunions and homecoming. It's going to be something really fun to watch, and I can't reiterate enough how what and I haven't mentioned this yet. This show is in great hands with Braden Fogerson, a.k.a. Burger Ferguson. He knows his stuff, and if you want a segment on NASCAR, boy, is he going to give it to you.
I think didn't we do it one time?
I've done it twice. I've done it once during the Leo era and once during the Mikey era.
The Leo Stoddard era of Red Zone. That's what we're going to start calling it.
Yeah, if there were no ad breaks, I would never stop talking.
Never stop talking about NASCAR.
I could literally do it forever.
Well,
yeah.
Usually when you tell us you want to do NASCAR, we would try to prep a little bit, but it didn't matter. You would drive circles around us, pun intended.
No, it's a lot of fun because I will say that the Red Zone gives an opportunity for people to talk about, you know, the sports that maybe, you know, other people don't think of and the sports that are important to them. And, you know, if you have someone in here that talks about horse racing or, you know, croquet or whatever sport they want to talk to, this is a platform that they're able to do it, and that's why, you know, Dane's been talking about it all night, but that's what makes Red Zone so great is that you can bring your guest in, and they can come in with their own perspective and talk about something that's important to them.
Even with some of our own interns localizing it, I think we're going to try and do more of what we did with Kaylee Sugimoto this semester, where she came in and played some audio for us, a piece that she did on the ISU gymnastics team. I think I want to start doing that more second semester of the show, starting back up in January, where we see our interns in the news and sports department, some of our newer people, bring in stuff that they did. Maybe they talked to a coach and a player from a lower represented ISU team. We talk a lot about football, a lot about basketball, both men's and women's, but we don't talk about gymnastics really. We don't do track and field, swimming and diving, a lot of great sports that have a lot of good stuff to say and are, as far as track and field is concerned, really good teams. So I hope we can get that representation coming in second semester with some of our reporters, kind of like they do on Bird's Eye View.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was able to, you know, be on the gymnastics beat last year, and, you know, I went into it not knowing anything about the sport, and I was able to learn a lot being friends with Kaylee and, you know, being able to ask her questions and, you know, having, you know, Quinn Flavin is someone that, you know, my mom is best friends with her mom, and she's a huge gymnastics head, and she, you know, I can ask her questions, things like that. And when you're covering a sport that you don't know, you know, to begin with, you've always got to have some people around you that can answer those sort of questions. And so we got a lot of people from a lot of different backgrounds that can all cover that stuff really well.
Another cool thing, too, one of my favorite stories that we covered was a national one, was the Mitchell Miller, Isaiah Myers Crothers story, and how, like, that's like a human story and something this is also a platform to talk about sports and how it relates to humanity, especially with what's going on with Brittany Griner too, and her coming back to the United States. Thankfully, that situation's wrapped up. Hopefully, we get to see her in the WNBA again soon. But overall, this show is just amazing. And a few more thank yous too. I want to thank Cade Kenyon, Matthew Schlifke, and Alex Lee, who I consider those guys like my brothers. They tune into the show often, and they're just – I also couldn't do it without them, too. I had so many thank yous, and I know I spread them out, but I kind of like that. Like,
yeah, you didn't have to do them all at once, because then now we have about 5 minutes left, and if I would have said, okay, thank you, Tom, we would have just had 5 straight minutes of thank yous.
Yeah.
And if you have more that you think of over the next 5 minutes, please. David, do you got any more questions for Dane? I know you're back there on the phone.
Yeah, and we're dealing with just a little bit of an echo now. That, but just want to say again, you never really talk about how powerful a smile can be and what it can do for someone else. And there have been many occasions where I may have walked into the news and sports room and a smile was far away from my face. And the first face I see is Dane Dreyfus with one of the biggest smiles, one of the most infectious smiles. And it radiated with me well. I think one of the first times I met him, I knew that this guy was going to be super cool, easy to talk to, and for a person who may sometimes struggle with a little bit of anxiety, he just made it very easy to be likable and to be a friend.
And I would like to add on to that, Dane, that, you know, I didn't find out that you weren't in news and sports until midway through this semester, because you were such a key character. Anytime I would walk into this hallway and just see people, you would be smiling and talking to everyone and be such a friend to everyone that I didn't realize you weren't in my department, because, you know, despite the fact that you don't have to deal, you didn't have to deal with anyone like me until then, or be nice to me or say hi to me, you know, you did, because, you know, you do that so well that you're just able to be nice to anyone. You're able to have a conversation with anyone. You're able to have fun with anyone. And, you know, that's why I didn't realize till midway through that you weren't in my department until this beginning of the semester, because, you know, you just do that so well that you make everyone feel welcome and feel like they have a friend.
Complete did it all that, both you guys. Dane is an awesome member of our staff. My first semester hosting the show and leading the sports department, I couldn't have asked for some better interns that we hired on, including Dane, who's been part of this crew for at ZND for years, but decided to join this crew for just this semester. And we were friends before we were colleagues on the show, and so I appreciate that we were able to transfer that onto the show, and I hope that the listeners heard how much fun we had with this show and this crew, because we're going to keep having fun with myself, David, and Fulgerson in years to come. David, you're right behind Dane. You're going to be doing your emotional show in about a couple months, too.
In a couple months, but I'm going to savor every moment I have left.
Please do. And I mean, you guys have left me speechless here. There's literally no words to describe like how grateful I am for you guys and this show. It's all love here. That is what WZND brings to the table. It is a huge part of just Illinois State as a whole, and there's a lot of responsibility that comes with it, being on air, informing the public, being first responders whenever there is an emergency, being a really important medium that people think is dying, but it is truly not the case. But overall, I think, should we do the sign-off at this point?
I'll play the close. I'm going to say my quick little thing. You should come back and listen to the Red Zone in mid-January when we get back going again. I believe that'll be January 19th. It'll be myself, Fulgerson, and David Moses. And for once, I'm going to turn my mic off. I want Dane to end the show for us. Thank you for listening. But first, you're going to hear from Dane.
So this is the close. This is the close on my college career. I don't know why I'm narrating it, but I just want to end it with a thank you to all the listeners. Couldn't do it without you guys. And thank you, WZND. Thank you, Illinois State. This was Dane Dreyfus. Good night.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.